Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. When it comes to higher education in our community, the St. Louis Community College System plays a very important role. We'll hear from the system's new chancellor in just a couple of moments after we hear about an old form of marketing with a new twist. That would be branded entertainment. Branded entertainment is billed as the ability to authentically merge content with product integration. It's gaining a viable foothold in the industry. Jeff Keane is the founder and CEO of Cool Fire Studios, a local production company with an impressive list of television credits. It's launched a new series on the Esquire Network, a six-part branded entertainment competition titled The Next Great Burger, produced in association with Anheuser-Busch. Jeff Keane joins me in studio, as does Jim Fisher, chair of the marketing department at John Cook School of Business at St. Louis University. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Jeff, I'll start with you. Give me your definition of branded entertainment as you apply it in The Next Great Burger.
Well, I think for us, a good piece of branded entertainment starts with a quality program. If the program's not entertaining, then I think everything else is unimportant. So I think you start with a great piece of quality, entertaining content. And then you find a way to seamlessly or organically integrate a product into that show. And to me, that's just kind of the basic definition.
It's not very subtle.
Well, I think actually the best cases are pretty subtle. I mean, I think you've got to walk a line there, because if it's too subtle, nobody notices, and that's not good for the brand. I think also if it's too heavy-handed and people notice too much, I don't think that's good for the brand either. So I think you got to really walk that line and find that balance.
Let's listen to a very short clip from your program to give an example of what we're talking about.
Hey, I'm Owen. This is Chef J.J. Johnson. And over there is Budweiser brewmaster Brian Durr, because nothing goes better with burgers than beer.
Jeff, I have to say, there's nothing subtle about that.
Well, you know what? I mean, when you play that clip sort of in isolation, it doesn't sound that subtle. But the truth is, in the context of the show, you know, we had a live studio audience, people drinking, eating, having a good time, kind of a high-energy, raucous crowd. So in the context of that setting, that comment really isn't that sort of big and over the top. And that's probably the most blatant reference to beer in the entire show as well.
Okay. Does Anheuser-Busch pay for the production of the program in order to have this exposure?
They contribute to the production, yeah. So they pay part of the cost of the production.
Jim, what do you think?
Oh, I think this is interesting. It's not surprising either, I think, given the trend, given the way things have developed. Brands have been around now for a long time, for over 100 years. And I think at the core of a brand is a little story. And so it's a kind of natural progression, I think, that we might find a brand realistically embedded in another bigger story, because we're quite familiar with the brands that surround us in daily life.
And it really comes as no surprise to find that Anheuser-Busch would be involved in something like this, because they're marketing geniuses over there. There's no question about it, taking full advantage of anything that comes along that'll help sell product.
Sure. And also, too, you'd have to recognize that their product Their main product, beer, is very much integrated into lifestyle and activities and sports. So I think it's kind of a natural fit there to pair their product with the kinds of activities that their consumers would ordinarily engage in.
Jeff, how is branded entertainment different than product placement? I mean, product placement, we'll talk more about that, goes way back.
Yeah, I don't know that there's that much of a difference, really. I think they're kind of similar terms that mean similar things. Maybe it's just the level of product placement, or the amount of product placement might be a differentiator between branded entertainment and product placement.
Where is this going, do you think? I mean, there has been a surge in this kind of programming.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see more and more of it. You're seeing it both in broadcast television, cable television, and in the digital space. It's not going away. I mean, at the end of the day, brands are funding programming in one way or another. I mean, whether it's through a 30-second TV spot or whether it's through product placement or a fully branded program, brands are the ones that are paying for everything. So I think they're just finding more creative ways to get their message across. I mean, people aren't watching the 30-second spot as much as they used to. I mean, all of us that have DVRs know that a lot of the things we watch, we're recording. And when we record it, we kind of blow past those commercials. So you have to be more clever about the way you tell your story, about the way you get your brand message across. And one of the ways to do it, and probably the best way to do it today, is to integrate that product into the entertainment, into the program, so that people can't skip past it.
Jim?
This is a classic case of making virtue of necessity, mm-hmm. because the old advertising model is beginning to fade. And so product placement becomes an attractive alternative as you see the brand inserted into ordinary life. As we make a further step towards this kind of branded entertainment, there's the chance for that integration to be even deeper, more realistic, and perhaps better aligned with the objectives of the brand marketer.
We should mention the history of this, because as you mentioned and as Jeff mentioned, advertising is nothing new, and now they're having to find a new way to reach the audience. But we can go back to the soap operas, for instance, which is exactly why they were called soap operas, is because soap companies sponsored the darn things.
Exactly. I was thinking of soap operas as you were winding up for that. Yes, that's that they have traditionally paid the freight. And over time, with you know, the advancement of technology, people are able to pay less and less attention to that. And really, marketing at its core is about attention, and it's about awareness. And so as you lose what is sometimes considered an interruption model, that is to say, you're watching your programming, and then it's interrupted with a commercial, your perceptual defenses go up. You tend not to pay as close attention. Maybe you walk out of
go someplace else.
Yeah. Exactly. So this kind of opens the door for branded entertainment.
For some historical context, we've talked about product placement. Not everyone may know exactly what we're talking about, but we've seen this employed in movies and on television, where the actor will hold up a Coca-Cola very prominently, or a computer is shown to be one particular make or another. This, too, has been going on for a long time.
Indeed. Perhaps one of the most famous cases of that is the Reese's Pieces that appeared on the classic Steven Spielberg movie E.T. Mm-hmm. And so the young boy, Elliot, I think, lures E.T. Back to his house, or maybe it's Drew Barrymore, I forget whom, but lures the extraterrestrial back to the house with a trail of Reese's Pieces. And the subplot to that is they were going to use M&Ms, but the Mars company didn't want their product used in that fashion, so they used Reese's Pieces, and Reese's Pieces got a huge bump out of that.
Cars also come to mind. There have been certain television shows in which cars are the stars of the program, and mm-hmm. certain models are consistent throughout. Jeff, back to your program, mm-hmm. and putting all this together, mm-hmm. Give us some sense of what it takes to get together with a major corporation. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little off there. A major corporation on one hand, Anheuser-Busch, and then a television network on the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, you gotta bring two parties together who both have agendas. In this case, it really started with Anheuser-Busch. They were doing a summer program, a series of live festivals around Bud and burgers. So, I mean, really nothing goes better than beer and burgers. So they were already doing a summer program, a series of live festivals where they were going to be cooking burgers and crowning champions. And they really wanted to find a way to extend that and possibly turn that into a television show. So we started meeting with them very early this year and started kicking around some ideas for a format for a show and trying to find ways to really come up with something that worked and that fit and that fit their product and really integrated their product well. So we came up with this idea for a cooking competition show, bringing chefs from around the country together to see who had the best burger. And they liked that idea, and we took that idea to the Esquire Network, and it fit well for them. They felt like it would be a good summer program for them. They know their audience well. They know their audience likes beer and likes burgers, so it fit well for them. So then at that point, it was just a matter of bringing the two sides together. And Cool Fire worked closely with Anheuser-Busch and worked closely with the Esquire Network to put a deal together. And we finally came to a deal just a couple months ago and went ahead and produced a show.
Who else is doing this sort of thing, to your knowledge?
You know, there's lots of companies doing this. We're not the only ones doing it. I mean, obviously, we're one of the few here in the Midwest that are doing it. But no, I think this is definitely a growing trend. And I think that other companies are starting to look at, you know, trying to find ways to do this very same thing. I think Coolfire is one of the leaders in this. I mean, we have done a branded television show. We've done branded digital series. We've done branded YouTube series. So we've got a lot of experience doing this. And I think it really comes from the fact that we started as a commercial production company. So we understand advertising and marketing. We have good brand relationships. And then, as you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, we started moving into original entertainment. So we understand storytelling as well. And really, branded entertainment is just a matter of putting together that storytelling ability with an understanding of brands and what their objectives are. And so I think it's been a natural fit for us to move into the branded entertainment space.
What about audience acceptance? You're just getting started with this particular project.
Sure.
Here, you've indicated you've done others before. Is the audience accepting of this? I mean, it's fairly blatant.
Yeah, I mean, I think audiences are accepting of it. I mean, I think, you know, you have to do it right. I think you can't be too heavy-handed about it. I think it has to fit. I think it has to feel organic. And I think that, you know, you don't have to be shy about it either. I mean, I don't think you have to try to deceive the audience or lie to the audience. I think the audience understands what's happening. I think the audience has an appreciation and a respect for brands and that brands have to get their message out. So I think as long as that brand message lines up with the content properly, I don't think it's terribly offensive to anybody.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, Don, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this in a radio studio, but this is in some ways the golden age of television because there's so much programming out there. And much of it high quality, and people are able to watch it according to their own schedule. So if you square around to that fact that there's a discriminating audience out there that has a lot of choices, then I think you come to the conclusion that people are going to land often on the shows that they want to watch when they want to watch it on whatever platform they want to watch it. So you're not going to force feed the viewer these days.
You know, with the product placement that we've been talking about, that's a little bit different because that was very subtle. Mm-hmm. There's no disclaimer saying, you know, the computers we're using here are all Apple computers, by the way, folks, for a good reason. Was there an ethical problem, do you think, with product placement being used that way?
There's a potential potential ethical problem with that, I think. You know, you want to know what the agenda is of the marketer. You want to be aware of the target. I would suggest that perhaps the ethical issues are especially sensitive when you're talking about a more vulnerable audience, like, say, children. So, you know, those are some of the areas where you need to be mindful that that there's a potential for conflict of interest and that there may be a potential for abuse. But in the past, you know, we've talked about the sweep of history. In the past, that wall between editorial content on the one hand and advertising content on the other was, I think, much more apparent and clear than it is today.
And Jeff, with branded entertainment, though, everything is very much up front. There is no there's no mystery as to what is going on and who's behind this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in our case, we say right up front, or we say in the credits of the show, you know, produced by Coolfire in association with Anheuser-Busch. So I think, you know, people know probably that the brewery is somehow involved. But again, at the end of the day, our objective and the objective of the network and really of the brand, too, was to produce an entertaining piece of television. And I think we achieved that. So as long as the audience is being entertained, I think that's the most important thing.
Have to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Jeff Keane. Keane, that is, who's the founder and CEO of Coolfire Studios here in town, which is the producer of the of a brand new program found on the Esquire network called The Next Great Burger. We're talking about branded entertainment and how advertisers work into this whole thing. Jim Fisher, also with us in studio, chair of the marketing department at the John Cook School of Business at St. Louis University. We'll come back and continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we would love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet to STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Jeff Keane of Cool Fire Studios and Jim Fisher of St. Louis University. We have a call from the Bevo neighborhood from Rich, who's been waiting for a while to get into this discussion. Let's bring him in. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, Don. How are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Okay. It struck me listening to your introduction, but I didn't hear the whole conversation about while my call was being screened, that I'm reminded that this might be an expansion of a commercial paradigm from maybe 30 years ago or so of a instant coffee that had these plot-driven commercials that went on serially, and they ended up being the water cooler talk at the office when a new commercial came on. I was just wondering what your guests might have to say about that.
All righty. Well, thanks for the call. Jim Fisher, what do you think? Do you remember that campaign?
I think I do. I think the challenge in commercial executions is getting your audience to pay attention. And so there are a number of things that you can do. You talked earlier about lack of subtlety. That's a possibility. Injecting a lot of plot into it. Sometimes we have longer forms of commercial. So that provides you with an opportunity to do more storytelling. So I think those kind of devices continue to be used. Matthew McConaughey of late has been in these series of ads for Lincoln, and he seems to be offering some interesting philosophical meditations in each and every one of those. And those in turn are provoking parodies and send-ups. I've seen a couple on Saturday Night Live. So this ability to kind of get your content picked up and repeated or repurposed, there are a lot of ways to do that.
Does the name Donald Trump mean anything to you?
I think
if there's an example of how that works, we're getting a dose of it right now on the political front, don't you think?
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of that is obviously critical, a fair amount of parody. But at the same time, my goodness, he continues to dominate the conversational agenda. And as he does that, he keeps his top-of-mind awareness, and at the present moment, that seems to be even reflected in his standing relative to other Republican candidates.
Of course, Jeff, I'm sure that's something you would love to have, is a famous actor or someone of some celebrity that would start talking about this program.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, beyond the television show, you want to get as many extensions of that piece of content as you can. And, you know, we have little digital shorts and pieces that we're putting out online and on Facebook and on other digital platforms. And, yeah, the hope is that gets, you know, out there pretty far and wide. And, you know, the ideal and the dream would be that somebody big picks it up or tweets about it or talks about it or sends that video out. So, yeah, you want to get it extended and get it out there as far and wide as you possibly can.
How has this your whole business changed over the years that you've been in it? Mm-hmm. What, I'm guessing 10, 12 years, something
it's
like?
It's been 13 years now.
13 years.
Yeah.
How has that changed as the digital world has expanded the way that it has?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just opened up more opportunities for us. I mean, on the original entertainment side, you know, what we say all the time is really we're content creators. So where that content plays, where it gets distributed – doesn't matter so much to us, whether it's broadcast television, cable television, whether it's digital platforms. And the fact that all of these platforms are out there just means that there's a greater need for content. So that's good for people like us that are content creators. But additionally, again, we've seen this trend in branded entertainment, particularly on digital platforms. And again, it plays well to our strengths and to our sweet spot because, again, we have understanding of the commercial and advertising space, and we have good storytelling ability too. So our ability to tell those kinds of stories for those types of brands is high, and we're going to capitalize on that and do as much as we can.
Would you call, in your particular situation, would you call Anheuser-Busch a sponsor?
Sure, yeah. I think they're a sponsor of the program. That's not the exact terminology that we use, but sure.
What do you use?
Again, I think what we say is the show is produced by Cool Fire in association with Anheuser-Busch. That's the official terminology. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're a sponsor of the program. At the end of the day, there is product placement. Again, we talked about, you know, what's the difference between product placement and branded entertainment. I think it's a little more thoughtfulness, probably. I mean, in this case, we really worked with the brewery to create the show. and creating it with a mind towards their product being integrated into it, instead of, hey, here's this TV show that we have, we're going to stick your product in it. So I think there are differences there.
Who has editorial control?
Well, at the end of the day, in this case, the network has editorial control. When the network buys a show, and they still have bought this show, Anheuser-Busch has contributed to the production, but the network funds the production of the show as well. So at the end of the day, whoever pays the most has editorial control. And in this case, it's still the network. So the network has control.
Any thoughts about any of that, Jim?
Yeah, I think the big story in all of this is technology. And certainly the digitization of technology. And it's at the same time, it's sort of democratized communications mm-hmm. technology. So there are a lot of voices. And from the marketer's point of view, the marketer is perhaps realizing that he doesn't dominate that anymore. There's so many voices out there. And so it comes back to this emphasis upon content and trying to shape the content in more thoughtful and purposive ways.
What sort of demographic are you shooting for with this program?
Well, the Esquire network is definitely a male-dominated audience. So, I mean, Anheuser-Busch targets males primarily as well. So we knew we were going after a male, relatively affluent demographic, and that's what the Esquire network is.
One of the things that occurs to me with a program like this or any advertising that involves alcohol mm-hmm. is the appeal it might have to a younger audience, mm-hmm. and therefore there is potential for criticism of you're really trying to sell to kids.
Yeah.
You have any sense of that being a concern?
Not concerned about that in this case. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the demographic that watches Esquire Network, it's an older male audience, so we're really not having to deal with that issue. Yeah.
There are other issues that are created as a result of this digital world that we're living in these days. I have in my notes here, if I can find it, there's something called displacement. Jim, do you have any idea what that means?
I'm more familiar with the notion of disruption, which might be a first cousin of that. I mean, we often think that technology disrupts other industries. We've seen that, of course, with the newspaper industry and the recording. And so I think there's some thought to what extent these new forms of content might disrupt something as established as television. But I think that we're seeing that that's not the case. In fact, that there's even more and more market, more and more demand for this content. And the thing that's, I would imagine, lighting up Jeff's eyes is that it will be paid for. It's not going to be free, that there's that people are paying for this content. Sometimes it's consumers, networks. So we're moving a little bit away from that old model where advertising sort of subsidized programming in an indirect way. And it's perhaps becoming much more direct now.
Jeff, this has to be an absolute boon for companies like your own.
Sure.
The notion that you're being paid to do this instead of just going out and trying to sell it and hoping for the best. You've got to have a product in order to do that.
Yeah, I know it's a different model for us. I mean, traditionally we would come up with an idea for a show. We would take it to a network. We'd try to sell it to them. We'd try to get them to buy the show from us. And if they like it, they buy it and they pay us to make it. It's a little bit different conversation when you walk in with a brand and you say, I've got part of this paid for already. It doesn't always make it easier, but it makes it a different kind of conversation.
And, of course, when you go in with someone like Anheuser-Busch, again, a giant like that, it's certainly got to be helpful.
Yeah.
Let me get back to this issue of displacement. I find this kind of fascinating, again, applying to our digital society. Displacement comes when you remove something from unflattering scenes. And the example that I saw of that mm-hmm. online, of course, was that Mercedes-Benz was apparently used in the film Slumdog Millionaire. And the Mercedes was shown in the slums. Mercedes freaked out and said, we don't want to be there. We don't want our product to be in this kind of environment. Mm-hmm. So they were able to digitally edit out the Mercedes logo. I mean, here we get into another realm altogether. Have you heard of that, Jeff?
No, not really. No, it's nothing that we've really gotten involved with in the past.
No, I wouldn't think that you would have, but just the fact that this can be done now,
that's the whole thing.
Well, Don, I think it goes back to that issue of control. Yeah. And that's one of the limitations of classic product placement is that when your product gets placed, you, the marketer, don't necessarily have control on how it's presented. And so it can often backfire in the manner in which you have. And so then it provides the opportunity to go back and try to displace that. But well, that's kind of trying to like putting the toothpaste back in the tube,
right,
though.
Well, there's also something apparently called replacement. And that is, and again, I'll use your sure. program as an example, Jeff. And this is I'm not suggesting anything more than just the hypothetical here. You've got Anheuser-Busch behind you. Anheuser-Busch is a big part of the program, obviously. You could, theoretically, if someone in the crowd of your live audience was holding a can of Coors, you could make that can of Coors go away.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, with visual effects, you can do almost anything. You can take things away. You can put things in. You could do just about anything that you could dream of. We could probably do it. Yeah. So it can happen.
So we, the audience, really have to trust you guys.
Well, you can trust in this show that every Budweiser you see is an actual Budweiser. I can promise you that.
What do you think about that, Jim? There is the potential there to really dupe the audience, mislead the audience.
Certainly there is, but I think you go back to what's the core of the story. Yeah. And then the core of the story in this case seems to me to be about food preparation and marrying food with drink. And so it seems like any kind of potential for doctoring would most likely come at the edges of that drama where you're trying to kind of perhaps push something away that might otherwise be distracting. So I see it as less of a problem, more maybe having to do with production values than actual storytelling. Because the storytelling is probably pretty scripted.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our show is a pretty tight format. It's a competition show. It's a cooking show. And, yeah, again, I can assure you that there's nothing but Budweiser in this show.
I want to make sure that you all understand. Yeah. I'm not suggesting is the case. Yeah, but the potential is out there if someone wanted to use it for that. Tell us a little bit more about the show. We only have a minute or two left. You've indicated it's a cooking competition show, but how is it structured?
Sure, yeah. The way it works is in each of the first five episodes, we have three contestants, and we went out and cast far and wide. So these contestants come from all over the country. These are people that have anywhere from zero culinary training to people that are chefs and own their own restaurants. So it's a real wide variety of contestants. In each of the first five episodes, we have three contestants. They each cook their burger. Our host and our judge taste those three burgers. They eliminate their least favorite. So now we have two contestants left. And now the contestants have to go cook again, but this time they're cooking for the entire audience. So they have to cook 60 to 75 burgers in a limited time. So cooking to scale is a whole different, you know, challenge. So they cook for the audience tastes each of the two burgers, and then the audience chooses the winner. So we crown one winner in each episode, and those five winners go to our finale. They compete again, and ultimately we crown the next great burger.
Where does all of this happen?
Happens right here in St. Louis. We shot it here in St. Louis over at Vindicette Restaurant, actually, in their event space.
So inside or outside?
Inside. Yeah, they have an event space over there at the restaurant, and we shot all six episodes here in St. Louis.
So where does it go from here in terms of we're doing burgers this season?
Yeah.
Well, are you looking ahead to?
Yeah, you know, we're always thinking in those terms, and we would love to see this sort of become a franchise. We've talked about the idea of the next great pizza, talked about the idea of the next great taco. Who knows where it could go? But hopefully the ratings continue to be good, and hopefully we get a chance to do more of these.
Jim, what is it, do you think, about food and television? I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this in terms of the success and the popularity of food programs on the tube.
It is amazing, isn't it? Unparalleled interest. More generally, there's a great interest in food. I think you got to recognize, too, that food preparation, food presentation is incredibly visual, and it lends itself quite nicely to this kind of format.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch The Burger Show, you're going to be hungry and you're going to want to go eat a burger after you watch this.
Right. And then pizzas are coming. Pizzas
who knows? Coming. You know, we hope.
Do you envision that perhaps taking this to a different level in terms of the kinds of food, less of backyard food, but more of a dinner type thing?
I don't know. I don't think for this format, no, yeah. Probably. I mean, I think this is a real simple, straightforward, fun type of program that lends itself to just really those kind of basic all-American foods.
Jim, let me get your final take in the minute that we have left here about where we're going with all of this. Do you have no problems at all with the way this is being structured?
Well, I don't have any well-defined problem. I think we have to be mindful of the potential for conflict of interest here. But, you know, brands are such powerful assets. They're so well tailored to communications that I expect we'll see more and more of this. And the fact that it's married with television and television's voracious appetite for content means that I expect we're going to see a lot more of this coming down the road.
There's that word appetite again. Yeah. Back to the food thing. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. The most interesting discussion I've found. In any case, Jeff Keane, thank you. Good luck with the program.
Thanks, Don.
On the Esquire channel, you can find it on Monday nights, did you say?
Yeah, Monday nights at 9 o'clock Central on Esquire.
Okay. And Jim Fisher, thank you. Coming up, we have an excerpt of St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Dale Singer's conversation with the new chancellor of St. Louis Community College. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.